Nobody's going to watch your money like you're going to watch your money. And you can't expect people to watch your money like you're going to watch it, because they're not getting paid your money. So for you to say, oh, I expect them to like work harder or do this. Well, okay, then give them a piece of the equity and maybe they will. But yeah, no one's going to work the way you're going to work. No one's going to protect your money or your investors' money the way that you are either.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Justin Brennan is the CEO and multifamily investor of the Brennan Pulley Group. They own over 500 units. He's also a real estate broker. Justin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. There's three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show in 90 seconds or less. Can you tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? How did you get there?
Well, we started in 2010 was the first investment we bought, and that was a $100,000 condo in the midst of the financial crisis in Murrieta, California, of all places, which is actually the heart of the financial crisis right in Riverside County. Nice. So the irony in that. And then that kind of grew from a single condo investment rental property into 2 to 4 unit deals. Then we got into 5 to 10, then 20 to 50. And then now we're into the 90 plus 100 plus unit space. And then you're starting to hit, you know, those 200 unit deals.
Got it. I love that. It sounds like you guys have taken a very measured approach to your investing. What have been some of the things you feel like you've done really well?
The logistics of setting up operations, especially from going in-state to out-of-state investing. You know, we kind of mastered the different size of deals, not getting too big too fast. You know, you hear from some syndicators and guys saying, oh, just go big. And, you know, I get it. I get the thought. And in theory, they're accurate. But the thing they're missing is that, first of all, they never started big. So I don't know how they say that. Number two, there's more zeros in the big stuff and more big mistakes you're going to make, because you're going to make mistakes. And so I'd rather make mistakes with smaller zeros where you can recoup that versus making a mistake that's 100 to 200 to $1 million mistake.
Right.
Right. And so managing those mistakes to where they were minimized and learning along the process to where, you know, now we're at a point where you learn as you go is a part of that too. And now I feel like, okay, we've gotten through some of those pains to where I'm not going to make the same mistakes twice. And then we're dealing with larger numbers now. You're dealing with $30, $40, $50 million deals and not 2 million.
Right.
Right. Or 500,000. So big difference.
Big difference there. When you say you got the logistics of operations figured out, what does that mean to you?
Yeah. So when you're going out of state, because that was the big thing for us in 2017, 18, we said, okay, you know, we're in California. It's not the cheapest place to live. We want to grow. So we had to set up operations outside. And my business partner, Christopher Poley, had ended up purchasing a ranch outside of Austin. So that was kind of now second headquarters. It was outside of Austin. So now we had Midwest and then West Coast. And then going into each market that we were interested in, primarily Midwest being Kansas City and Missouri, we got Oklahoma, Texas, Alabama, stuff like that, Tennessee, and setting up operations about 6 to 9 months in advance, actually pulling in deals. And when I say operations, I mean property management companies, construction crews, logistics, legal, accounting, all those things that you're going to deal with from kind of the back office side of things, lay of the land, good neighborhoods, bad neighborhoods, where's the development, where's path of progress, where's the city planning on putting in money, are there railways, are there light rail systems, all these details that go into where's the market for the market. So we don't just go in and start finding deals and then kind of catch tail later. It's 6 to 9 months in advance, get the lay of the land, operations set up. So that way when deals start flowing, we can execute quickly.
That sounds very time intensive. What is the practical way that you guys have decided to do that? Without you, Justin, moving to Nashville, Tennessee and going, okay, let me go spend 9 months here and figure out what this city is doing.
I am flying in there consistently during that 6 to 9 months. And spending 3-4 days at a time, meetings, driving neighborhoods, learning it. So yeah, it is time intensive, but it's also avoided us from making really dumb mistakes and getting put into a neighborhood. And we're like, oh, we shouldn't have bought here.
Right.
Right. I mean, so perfect examples, you know, every time we're looking at a deal, I'll go sit at the property at different times in different days of the week. So I'll go in the morning, I'll go midday, and I'll go in the evening and wait for people to come home from work. I'll go on a weekday and a weekend, typically a Sunday and a Monday or Tuesday, because I just want to see the flow of the area, flow of the neighborhood, when you're getting past normal due diligence and things like that, right? So you need to understand what you're getting yourself into. Otherwise, you deal with horror stories like I heard recently from a first-time syndicator who bought a property, had money backing. It was his first bigger deal, didn't do proper due diligence, got into it, thought they were getting a great deal because they had a great basis. And on paper, the cap rate looked great, cash on cash, everything looked good on paper. Then come to find out, because of the lack of due diligence, there was a lot of deferred maintenance, a lot of issues with that property, neighborhood not being the best setup. And they inherited a lot of delinquencies, bad tenants, issues, and it just turned into a complete. And now they've lost well over $1 million. Well, and the guy's, he'll never do another syndication because he'll never get money again, right? He was backed by good money, good people. But because he operated so poorly, he's basically blackballed.
So, right.
That's why I say don't go big too soon, right? Yeah. Despite what, you know, some people say, you're going to make mistakes, just don't make big ones.
When you're setting up your back office, talking about attorneys, title companies, all of those, you know, other than calling your contractors and maybe even going and seeing their work, like what else, what other due diligence is there really to do until you're ready to send them a deal? I mean, there's only so many conversations you can have with a contractor like, hey, you guys, yeah, we've done these three projects. Okay, cool. Well, when I get one together, I'll call you.
Yeah, no, exactly. You can certainly go and see some of their work. That's definitely something you want to take a look at. Understanding, you know, their foreman, who runs the jobs, what kind of software do they use? How do they do billing? Who does their supply chain? Who's going to order the supplies? Is it going to be you as the owner? Is it going to be them?
Right.
Yeah. How's their labor force? We were talking about labor shortages, especially these days, right? So we're dealing with that, you know, and foreman on site, you know, because a lot of times they're running multiple jobs. So, okay, great. So the foreman's going to be here once a day in the mornings and the evenings. Who's opening up? Who's locking units? Is it our job, your job? Is it our maintenance staff? Logistically, how are we dealing with that? Yeah, what software are you guys using? Are we corresponding through that for just, because when you're doing renovations on value add, it's an assembly line.
Right.
Right. And so you have to really manage that correctly so you don't have too many vacancies at a time, too many not available at a time. It's like this seesaw assembly line battle between your kind of reno guys and your leasing staff, right? And that blending those two together to where you have, okay, 5 units a month come vacant. How long does it take you to turn those things? How long does it take you to market them? How long does it take people to get in there where you're collecting checks? And I kind of calculate check to check, meaning person moves out, you're not getting any money. When's the next person give you a check? Is it 30 days, 60 days, 45? Like, what does that look like?
Right.
And timing that up and then layering over layering, because it's a dance. It's not easy to manage that process and it's not a perfect science. So having a construction crew that gets that and can help you manage that and isn't just all over the place is really, really, really important.
Yeah, absolutely. What about that? I guess that management side of it, is there a certain size of construction company you guys always look for where you say, man, you've got to have X number of employees, you got to do X number of dollars in volume a year? Is there anything like that that goes into that equation on your kind of due diligence side?
A little bit. Yeah. So you should definitely have at least one foreman on site or an assistant foreman every day.
Right.
If you're going to run the jobs. And if they're leaving for a little bit, but they need to pretty much be there constantly, in and out every day, touching the job site every day. And then you're typically going to have 2 workers per unit. It's kind of what I've seen the best flow from a labor force standpoint. So if you're going in to reno a unit, depending on what you're doing to it, but let's presuming you're doing a pretty good reno and you're adding washer dryers and some electrical work. So there's some rough stuff that has to get done. That usually happens first. Right. So you have those guys going in, doing the rough electrical, rough plumbing, and then that gets done. So now coming in behind that is some drywall, painting, cabinet guys, countertops, fixtures, plumbing, electrical, you know, fixture type stuff. Flooring, you know, is usually one of the last items going in, stuff like that. And then appliances, if you're bringing those in. So, but 2 guys per unit. So if you're doing 5 units at a time per month,
right,
that's 10 dudes on site every day.
Yeah.
Plus your foreman.
Right.
So Mr. Contractor, can you supply that? Yes, we can. Okay. What happens if you don't, right? So it's just working through some of that logistical stuff because we've dealt with it, right? Where the contractor says X, and then there's 5 guys on site, and then you start falling behind, right? Because now you're not catching up to the reno schedule, right? And then you got to backtrack and all this other stuff. So it's not a perfect science.
No, it's not. Even like you said, if they say, yeah, we can get 10 guys on site plus a foreman. I mean, if you're not there when the cat's away, the mice will play. especially in the construction. Well,
and then that's where our staff comes on top of that. That's why it's so key. That's why we don't do any deals under 90 units anymore.
Right.
Because 90 units is where the economies of scale come in, where you have on-site management, on-site leasing, on-site maintenance, on-site everybody. And so they're my eyes and ears on it. Plus we have cameras.
Right.
Plus we have me, and I'm on site every other week, and I'll just show up randomly on purpose. Right. And you just have, listen, nobody's going to watch your money like you're going to watch your money. And you can't expect people to watch your money like you're going to watch it.
Right.
Because they're not getting paid your money.
Right.
So for you to say, oh, I expect them to like work harder or do this. Well, okay, well, then give them a piece of the equity and maybe they will. Right.
That's just, maybe. Not
yeah,
always.
Maybe. But yeah, no one's going to work the way you're going to work. No one's going to protect your money or your investor's money the way that you are either.
Have you ever made a bad buy?
Not yet. Not knock on wood, man. No, not yet. We could have, you know, we ended up last year having to pull out of a deal that in hindsight was kind of, it was weird. It was a blessing because we were finding things out and then, but we had money hard and there, what really wasn't, there wasn't an out for us legally at that point, but just so happened there was a fire on one of the properties during escrow, which ended up giving us an out legally. And then hindsight 2020, you're like, gosh, that was actually a good decision. Because it may have ended up being a bad buy for us at the time, you know, kind of looking forward now 6 months later, we're like, we got, you know, a lot going on with this other property at the moment. So it would have been put us in a tough spot. So that was a little bit of luck, but I say there's no accidents. Things happen for a reason and there are no accidents despite right. the craziness right. that can happen in life.
What's a lesson or a mistake you've made that you feel like you could help someone else not make?
Don't hire the cheapest contractor. I made that mistake once, even though I did my due diligence on them, right? We checked them all out. I even tested them like on a small portion of the job first to see if they could execute. And they did. And I was like, okay. So you got a little $3,000 portion of the job you executed. Okay, now we're going to graduate you up to the next stage. And then come to find out they're just full of hot air and they took about $17,000 and, you know, so, I mean, it wasn't a massive mistake that we couldn't recuperate from, but it was a $17,000 mistake. But imagine if that was another contractor on a much, and that was only on the 30 unit deal. This right. is where I say the mistakes are made. Imagine that was a 200 unit deal and that was a $200,000 mistake.
Right.
Do not ever, people know this intuitively, but just stick with this. Don't ever pay the contractors in advance. I mean, progress payments, you can do a deposit, typically maybe 25%, but a lot of times you'll get bids come in and they'll say 50% up front and then 50% upon completion. Yeah, kiss my, you know what?
Right.
I will pay you a 20 to 25% deposit up front. Then we will do progress payments, right? Depending on the length of your job. And then you will get the final payment within 30 days of completion.
Yeah, that 25% up front is largely contingent upon what they're bringing. If they're not bringing any materials and it's all
yeah, that's straight labor, correct?
If it's straight labor, I would be really hard pressed to give them anything.
Like, well, sure. Yeah. So usually the deposits are typically based on materials,
right?
Bringing on site, you right. know, if it's roofing or
sure.
fencing or, you know, basic stuff, then you're typically paying a 25% deposit because there's an on site yeah. move for materials.
Right. Yeah, I get it. I was a contractor for way too long. I completely understand it.
But yeah, and I'm a licensed GC. So, but yeah, I would never, we've just learned that battle and you have to fight it a bit because they want some more payment up front because they're either, with all due respect, not all of them. So I don't want to aggregate, but a lot are really bad at money management. And so they're floating a job here for a job there and money moving here for that here. And they can't really manage their money correctly. So they're taking money from here to pay some guys over here. And you see how that flows and you're not going to use our job as your cash flow. So.
Right. Not only that, but also just the risk of them, like you said, packing up and walking and you go, oh, okay, well, thanks. Well, that was enjoyable writing you.
A check. And I paid you 50% up front.
Right. Yeah.
So there you go. Do a deposit, but that's specific usually for materials.
Yep. That makes a heck of a lot of sense. Justin, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
You can Google me, man. Justin Brennan on Google. That'd probably be the easiest way to have some stuff pop up. Or you can go to our website, which is brennanpohle.com. That's B-R-E-N-N-A-N and then P-O-H-L-E.com. And yeah, read whatever you want.
Great. Sounds good, man. Justin, thanks for your time today. Certainly appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.